This is the Love Foco Show.
If you're coming to Fort Collins and you're spending weekend with us and you're spending a lot of money, you probably don't need a hat. You probably don't need a scarf either. So I thought, what if we diverted that money to a scholarship? And I got support from Sage, I got support from our ownership, and so we were spending $10,000 a year on this stuff, which those people didn't need. And so we created a scholarship.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and change makers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
What makes you who you are today? How do you grow? How are you shaped? And how are you continually being formed? These are just some of the conversations that I have today with the general manager of the Elizabeth Hotel here in Fort Collins, Carl Pratt. I think you are going to love this conversation. Carl shares about his history, his upbringing, some interesting adventures that he had in the Middle East, and how he landed as the GM of the Elizabeth here in Fort Collins today. And gosh, what I love about his leadership is that he's not just trying to run a business or run a hotel. He's trying to impact the community. He's trying to use the resources that he has as the general manager to impact lives all around our city. He's truly loving Fort Collins one life at a time. And I'm so thankful that he sat down with us for a conversation on the Love Foco Show. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Well, Carl, thank you so much for giving me some of your time. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you had meetings before I came here, and I bet you have meetings after I leave. But really excited to sit down with you. This is an amazing hotel. So grateful for your presence in our city and what the Elizabeth does in terms of giving back and just creating a beautiful and hospitable space in Old Town. I want to get into all of that and what you do for a living and the way that you care for our city. But I want to start the conversation the way I start all these podcasts. Just tell me a little bit about your Fort Collins origin story.
Yeah, like, great.
Where'd you come from? How'd you land here?
Right.
Give us a little history of your life here.
Yeah. So really the majority of my existence on earth has been in New England. So I grew up in Vermont and spent 20 years in Western Massachusetts, which is really very much like Vermont. It's rural. It's on the other side of the states.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's Berkshires. It's a beautiful part of the world. And a lot of culture there because there's the Boston Symphony Orchestra that's there in the summertime, and then a ton of other Shakespeare and Company, modern dance. It was there with a variety of things to do in the summertime and on down line. So,
A lot of arts.
Yeah. So Norman Rockwell Museum is there. So a lot of history, very comfortable, easy living. That towns of 5,000, just a bunch of them connecting to each other, and a great place to be for a family, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. All those little Vermont. I mean, these are the places that, you know, we see pictures of the fall.
Right.
All this beautiful landscape. Right. And you just take a little highway, a little county road to all these small towns, but also where we might drive a couple hours to Breckenridge, or we might drive a few more hours to get to Telluride, you know, beyond Brecker, you're just probably a few hours from a bunch of major cities too, because New England is kind of packed tight out.
Right. Yeah, it's 2 hours to Boston and 2.5 hours to New York City.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, you know, it's really accessible. A lot of different things that you can enjoy there.
And did you grow up kind of like going into the city and hanging out in those spaces, or did you stick mostly to
I grew up in Vermont, and we raised our family in Lenox, Massachusetts.
Okay.
So Vermont was, I would say, I was not a country kid, but I was pretty naive. You know, Vermont was, I didn't spend a lot of time, our family, I was youngest of six, and it was a wonderful little town, again, Montpelier, Vermont, 5,000, easygoing, and it was again, a really comfortable way to grow up. Yeah. There was not a lot of crime. There was not a lot of angst, and it was easy getting up in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, close-knit family, some of the memories are skating on, my dad built a skating rink on the side lawn.
I was just going to say, does this make you like a winter sport kind of guy?
Yeah, exactly. So you can't, it's tough to be in those environments, right, that are nearly 5 months of winter.
Yeah.
So we did ski, and we had a skating rink on our side lawn. Every year we would be outside. The winter didn't stop us from being outside.
Yeah.
So I think
the dark, I don't think people always realize how nice it is here. Like the sun is out.
Absolutely.
And it lingers, you know, I mean, it goes down earlier, obviously in the winter, but when you start going up into the north, I mean, I lived in Maine for a little while.
Right.
And I swear by Christmas time, the sun was down by like school. School was over and the sun was already down. Not going down, but.
Yeah. It's like, it's 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's another piece, which actually was part of this, you know, the idea of coming here. But I think that somehow, one, I think being the youngest of six really formed who I am in a lot of ways. And I think being in a really comfortable, safe environment with my family and everything around me just created a really easy way of living.
Yeah.
And again,
and there's good and bad things to that, right?
Like
I mean, I think we take most of the great stuff.
Right.
And also you start to be exposed to a broader scale of humanity or metropolitan areas. And you're like, oh, I'm so grateful for the way I was raised. And yet it might not have been a full picture.
Absolutely.
Of what everyone goes through.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about like the great things and like the things you had to learn maybe a little bit later in life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the great things were you form a really comfortable friend group.
Yeah.
And I maintain those friends forever.
Yeah.
I still have, you know, contacts with those folks. And I think waking up in the morning, I never felt threatened by almost anything.
Yep.
There was no fear that really, other than, you know, a brother or two, right?
Right. Yeah, you're the youngest.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that. But it was isolating on a social diversity side of things, right?
Yep.
So I did take a leap and graduated college with a degree in health and wellness, but during that time I was in athletic training. So for 2 years I was, doing rehab with athletes and taping ankles and that sort of thing. So I took a leap and went to Saudi Arabia.
Oh, really?
To work at a sports medicine hospital. And
that is a leap. When you said leap, I thought you were going to say like I went to Philadelphia or something. Like that.
Yeah. So talk about. I mean, literally, it did feel like I was on Star Trek. I landed in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and a complete world I've never would have seen, and nor would I probably go back. But the amazement of cultures and the appreciation for understanding a little bit more of that and how that really works it was probably one of the most depressive points of my life.
Yeah.
But also one of the most adventurous, for sure.
Depressive as in just kind of alone, isolated, everything's different and you're trying to find your way? Or
Because didn't know the language.
Yeah.
I was there on my own, didn't have a friend, or I didn't move to, you know, to live in a place where I knew anybody.
Yep.
And the culture was so different. Things like, I would be in the grocery. So you get some orientation about how to manage in a Muslim country, and because it was Riyadh, it was the most strict of the Muslim traditions because the royal family was there. So, I was in grocery stores, and when prayer call came, everything shut down.
Really?
Yeah. You had to wait it out.
Yeah.
Then you had to start timing your life around prayer call. And
that is interesting because I've traveled to, different Middle East countries, Morocco, even parts of Southern Spain, very influenced by kind of Islam and
yeah.
The prayer call there was responded to kind of individually.
Mm.
But what you're talking about is actually it was such a prominent role in the city that like society responded, not just individuals.
So, and you know, I respect that kind of discipline. And also it was just so out of what I was used to. So it was, and then I was able to travel to Europe, and I landed in Czechoslovakia, so I was around there for a couple of days. So the exposure to the rest of the world, and maybe not the rest of the world, but portions of the world, right, were just incredibly beneficial and influential as to how we live in the United States. Is if you don't ever leave the United States, right, you think this is what it is, and that's, of course,
And if you don't ever get exposed, you can complain about really simple things that are like, I don't know, we should probably be thankful.
Exactly right.
I'm fascinated. I'm curious, like, what was in you that gave you that unction to go? Because, I mean, you're talking about like never growing up feeling threatened. I mean, these are gifts. These are gifts to the human psyche and the human soul to grow up in a safe and secure place. You talk about these little communities, skating rink, you know, a tight-knit family, probably a tight-knit friend group that you would even mention that you're in continued contact. What about it was, you know what, like, I'm just going to cast caution to the wind and just go for it. What happened for you to make that decision?
Yeah, I've thought about that, and I haven't been able to come up with a good answer, because I'm not a spontaneous person, and I'm also not that adventurous. So I think what it came to is I had this, so I did have a little bit of an interlude. So I went to Kuwait. My dad was a civil engineer. So my parents moved to Kuwait in the mid-80s. And so I went to visit them, and I was interested in, so the health club.
You were in college at the time?
Or? Yeah, I was just graduated college. And I visited them after graduation, and I was going to work at a health club in there's a couple of hotels in Kuwait that I was going to have an opportunity, because just at that time was the health club industry was just starting. It wasn't really much of a thing. There was a couple of hotels there, Hyatt, Hilton, and my parents did a little sleuthing. They found that there was this health club there, and I could have worked at one of these hotels, and then I could come back. And it was an adventure, right? So, I ended up finding this other opportunity to work at a sports medicine hospital, which I was very interested in. And for one reason or another, I didn't really think about it much.
Yeah.
I just said, well, this would be cool.
You were 23 and you were like,
Let's try this.
Yeah.
And there I landed. So it was, I guess it was probably, I just didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know.
Yep.
I didn't know enough not to.
Right. Yeah, every parent listening right now is like, yes, that sounds like my son. Right? Yeah,
exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. Brain hasn't fully developed even at that point. But it was one of the most growth years of my life, because I'd never been alone.
Yeah.
You know, large family, go to college, you leave college, is total social saturation, right?
Yeah.
And so it was really an amazing experience.
Well, and those things, they're so important. I feel like more often now we're kind of encouraged by culture, society. Oh, this is changing a little bit, but encouraged to avoid pain, to avoid hardship, to just take maybe an easy route or an easy path.
Yeah.
But that never actually grows you into the fullness of who you were created to be, right? Like it does tend to be moments of suffering and sacrifice and hardship that shape you in a different kind of way. And at the same time, you might not have been able to withstand that had you not had your upbringing of security and solidity and deep social connection and ties. And so in some ways, the goodness set you up for some of the pain and sacrifice that shaped you as a man.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing is, you know, this is, if you don't think about it, but this is mid-80s. There was no internet.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember looking at the moon and thinking, it's so comforting because there's my friends and family that are looking at the same moon.
Yeah.
But I'm thousands of miles away.
Right? That is just wild to think about, because I, you know, just a little bit of my story. I mean, I wasn't at Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, but I lived in southern Spain when I was in college and traveled around Western Europe and North Africa, but I had a cell phone with me.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't paying for data and stuff, but anytime I was in a hotel, I would link up to the Wi-Fi and I'd connect.
Yep.
And you know, I was on the cutting edge of that.
Right.
Yeah. So I think, you know, 10 years before me, 15 years before me, it had to have been totally different.
Yeah. I would write letters and it would be weeks before
they would,
you know, get to my family or friends.
That's a lot of courage. I feel like it takes a lot of courage to do that. And not thinking about it.
Right, exactly.
You know, both at the same time.
I didn't think about it. I mean, it was really completely out of character of who I was at the time, and kind of who I am. I'm a homebody, right?
Yep.
So, anyway,
those moments, they do. They shape you.
I mean, it is those moments that I can still just think, and instantly I'm back in my apartment listening to the prayer call.
Yeah.
And I can hear it. Yeah. Right. So. It does stick with you,
and it
does influence your thoughts.
That's so fascinating. Thank you for sharing that.
I mean, that's
an interesting part of your story. And
yeah, so any, you know, then a career turned into coming back to the States, working in a health club.
Yeah,
and then I landed.
How did you get into health? Were you just like a sports kid?
Yeah.
Growing up, and you just wanted to kind of be around athletics and.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in a subtle influence, his dad died at 47 of a heart attack. So he very quietly just, and some in some ways, the only option is we had, he let me have the car to go to school. He walked to work.
Okay.
And he was doing it for prevention.
Yeah, stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
Yeah.
And then he started running, and he ended up with angioplasty surgery at 53 years old. The reason they didn't, and that was on one side of his heart. The other side of his heart was completely blocked, but it was collateral circulation. So he didn't need to have an open heart surgery. He didn't have to have surgery.
Yeah.
So he basically saved his life by walking and running. And I think that very subconsciously influenced the idea that I could maybe help people with that approach,
right,
instead of just sort of letting it happen or being not clear about what to do.
Yeah.
So I landed at a place called Canyon Ranch, which is a health wellness destination resort, one in Tucson, Arizona, and I was there for the opening of their second property in Lenox, Massachusetts. So that satisfied a whole ton of what I was hoping to do with my life, because we were surrounded by physicians and behavioral psychologists, nutritionists, exercise physiologists, and all kinds of activities with hiking and biking and fitness classes and meditation and yoga.
Did you say a fitness resort?
Yeah. So basically, there was 124 rooms, and we had programs and activities, about 50 programs and activities every single day that you could do. You could choose from massages, manicures, pedicures.
That's such an interesting way to think about vacation.
Right.
I mean, there's any number of people, like my wife is like, no, we're going on vacation, a place where I can drink coffee and espressos in the morning.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll switch to a glass of wine later in the night, and but people spend money.
Spend
to
money
go
on
and
that.
Exercise. And,
yeah. And there was no alcohol and no smoking.
Wow.
So it was, you know, it was sort of the Wizard of Oz, where anything health you were interested in, we could provide support. So I was a spa director, hotel director, and then managing director. So I was there for 17 years, and
was a good chunk of your career.
Yeah, exactly. So it set the stage for what I would do from that point on. I was not moving into a hospitality scenario. It was a health and wellness scenario that had a hospitality component.
Yeah, and this will come out. We'll chat in the interview about your role here we call you general manager of the Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Yep. So general manager of the Elizabeth now, but started as, or did you, I mean, like when you went back to this, or if you go all the way back to this fitness resort, did you start as like a trainer or a nutritionist?
I started as an associate spa director.
Okay.
So I had a couple of years in the health club industry,
yep.
and then they hired me to do, and it was on the spa side. So, and with an opening, there's a lot of transition. So I had opportunities to elevate fairly quickly.
Yeah.
But
now you hire great. People, so you also know, like, you must have been doing something right.
Fair enough.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there are other people that did not elevate maybe as quickly as you did.
Yeah, fair. And I think that was, I think it was, I didn't wait to be asked.
Yeah.
So I just did.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Are you talking about like in managing the spa stuff, like you just felt empowered to make decisions and?
Yeah. Yeah, and when I saw things, I did something about it. I didn't walk past it.
Yeah.
Or if there was an interaction that I had with somebody or if I needed to have an interaction with somebody, I would.
Yeah.
Instead of avoiding that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I find myself curious of where that's coming from. I mean, probably some part of your temperament and personality, probably something about the culture you were in that made you feel like that was appropriate or...
Right. Yeah, I think...
What kind of combination created that in you?
I think some of it has to do with, because I was the youngest of six, and I watched, I was an observer, I apparently was an observer, didn't know it at the time, of course,
yeah.
But every time my brothers or my sister did something that was good, then I would note that.
Yeah.
And then if it wasn't, then I would note that.
Yeah.
And so I guess I was just watching and watching behavior and in a sort of unconscious way. But there was a time, I remember back going, okay, so I'm not gonna do that because that didn't work out for that brother.
Yeah.
And I think that there's I oftentimes don't give credit. I mean, we're not, you know, I've been meditating since I was 13. Mm-hmm. So, and that's not something that necessarily you talk about, but I was more self-aware every moment, every minute when I was meditating.
Yeah.
And that self-awareness, I think, helped me be more aware of what's happening outside and around me.
Yeah.
So that's the, I guess it's just a combination of things
yeah.
that, you know, all of us end up with, and then we use them in ways that hopefully it's productive.
Yeah. No, it stands out to me because I work with all kinds of different people and you have a lot of employees here, I'm sure. And just looking at and watching, you know, peers, friends, my own kids, and trying to encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, don't just walk past something. Like,
right.
Make something happen and initiate with the world around you. You don't
yeah.
always have to be... responsive or I mean, I guess on the worst day that turns into passivity.
Passivity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think, you know, it's somewhere along the way we all come out genetically, some right.
Just,
so
yeah,
I
temperament.
Yeah, temperament.
Yep.
So I think in the end, those things just came with
yeah.
me, and I got comfortable with it. So, It was a, you know, it was a great period of my life. It was a great combination of aspects associated with what I wanted to do with my life and help people and on down the line. So, and that obviously meant not just our guests, but also our staff and on with all of that. So then I left that, did more traditional hospitality resorts and hotels. And eventually I've been laid off three times in my career, which creates another point of resilience.
Yeah.
And
you stayed in the same kind of career path?
Yeah, so I was laid off from, so I went to Dartmouth College, had a hotel that was owned and operated by the college. And after 4 years, they had a new president, they brought in a management company, and the management company generally gets rid of the general manager is the first decision they make. So, which again, I had not had exposure to, because I was in this really, sort of isolated canyon ranch. It was privately held. There was no brand. There was no asset manager. I was talking with the owners, and that was it, right? So that took place. It was my son's senior year in high school, so we were able to manage staying until he graduated. But then I went back to it. Then I went back to the Berkshires and worked for, again, a private owner. And within 4 years, they sold the property. So a management company came in, and I got laid off from that as well. So I was better at it the second time. So
better at being laid off?
Yeah, better at being laid off.
I thought I picked up on that yeah. from your body language, but I couldn't quite tell if you were talking about the job or being laid off.
Yeah, no, being laid off. But that took me a year to find another job. Yeah. So then I landed at Miraval, which is a competitor to Canyon Ranch in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
And I was
So Vermont to Kuwait and Saudi, back to kind of that New England beauty, now down to Tucson.
Tucson, right.
Which is temperate, or I mean, temperature-wise, maybe a little bit more like Kuwait than Vermont.
Exactly. And never seen a saguaro cactus and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was supposed to be temporary, but it ended up being... So I was going to go there for a couple of years and then go back to the Berkshires after they had... redesigned and rebuilt the resort there. Delays and delays and delays. So I ended up leaving Miraval and working in senior living for 3 years in Tucson. Yeah. So we were in Tucson, Arizona for 5 years.
The saguaro cactus, by the way, I got really nerdy on this.
They're really cool.
Because the first time I went, I was fascinated by them. I grew up in the Midwest, nothing like that.
Yeah.
And I went on the nerdiest deep dive on saguaro cactus, and the thing that fascinated me was how you know, you're captivated by the size of them and things like that, but it took years upon years upon years for them to get that. I mean, those are hundreds of years old, the really big ones.
Yeah.
And I loved the image of this slow growth is steady growth. It's strong growth that we want the quick fixes, but really the saguaro cactus is this beautiful picture of resilience in tough climate that just takes a really long time to make it happen.
What was it? It was like 70 or 80 years before the first arm?
Before the first arm.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, that's... and we see these ones that are, you know, way bigger than we are with multiple arms.
Yeah.
You don't realize that's... Oh, that like might be 300 years old.
Right.
It's just been a good life lesson for me because I like to move quick and I like to move fast. To just embrace like the slowness and the steadiness of this.
Yeah. And the struggle.
Yeah.
Right, because the arid temperatures.
They're not the easiest climate to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that's really interesting about the desert is even almost 100, 200, 300 feet, there's another growth point with certain vegetation. So saguaro's at a certain level, and then, but they go too high, they can't survive there, and then agave, they can't grow at a certain elevation, and it's very defined.
Very specific,
whereas in New England, it's just like a mass of everything, all the same place and same time. So, really interesting.
Well, I wasn't planning on.
Yeah, it's just our cactus.
I mean, it just like my own nerdiness came out there. But I think there's real lessons in nature around us, and you know, if we can slow down and observe some of that, we can learn a lot.
Yeah,
glean from creation.
So as a result, actually, I probably should have said, and part of the reason we got to Tucson was in my wife and I met at Canyon Ranch.
Okay.
So we shared an office for like a year.
Yeah.
And ended up getting married. And when we had our 25th wedding anniversary, the owners were very kind to us. They were I would say, just really good people. And I just called them and said, hey, Sue and I are having our 25th wedding anniversary. You did offer, would you be okay if we came for a couple of days? And they said, you can come as long as you want. And you'll stay in our presidential suite. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just rolled it out. So we spent 10 days there, and it was this moment of, boy, this is a really comfortable, the sun, the lack of humidity. So that's when we decided, okay, we'll go to Miraval because we had that time.
Yeah.
And thinking about going back to New England, part of the issue there was we all end up with Lyme disease because of the ticks there were so prevalent.
Yeah.
And we decided that was not a good option just because my wife has got it really bad. So
yeah, that can really impact your body.
Yeah, and it's lingered. But I think the idea of going back to that was not a good option. Yeah. And we love the Southwest. But we needed something more New England-esque. And Sue was looking around and she found Fort Collins. And this, actually there was a job here.
At the Elizabeth.
Okay. It actually, what triggered it too, was my brother sent me a map of where life will be inhabitable in the United States 50 years from now.
Okay.
Based on climate and
yeah,
all
climate
that kind
change,
of stuff.
Things like that, yeah.
The line is right about midline of Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah, and up.
Yep.
So we thought, well, so Sue started poking around and Fort Collins came up. Okay. And I, you know, went through the process and ended up getting hired.
Yeah.
So
did you start here as the GM or
yeah.
Was there a career journey there as well?
No, I came here as the GM.
Yeah, you had a bunch of history.
Had enough experience,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Over the years, and I think it was partly I was at a college town as well, so you know CSU and yeah. All the influence of that.
Yeah, just you had mentioned Dartmouth and working in that space
yeah.
earlier, and
yeah,
yeah.
So. It worked out, and it was a little bit of a surprise to me because I had no brand experience, and I had, I really worked for independent hotels. So, asset manager.
For folks who maybe aren't aware, the Elizabeth, it is part of a larger family.
Yes.
But it's like a signature.
Yeah. So Bohemian is the primary owner. Of the Elizabeth, and there's some fractional ownership with other, with Sage Hospitality Group is who I work for,
okay.
And then Realberry, previously McWhinney. So there, and McWhinney's the asset, Realberry's the asset manager, Sage is the management company who I work for, mm-hmm. and Marriott is the brand, and it's Autograph Collection.
Okay.
So there's a number of constituents and on down line. So, but in the end, it's a hotel, right? It's,
yeah.
it's all the same stuff.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing with the Elizabeth is because of Sunset Lounge on the rooftop bar, Magic Rat, Emporium, Bowerbird, the guest rooms, but also being in Old Town, it really has a resort feel.
Yeah.
In the sense that guests come, they can enjoy their day outside, or in the area, Fort Collins, all of the places that we all love,
yeah.
Then they come back to us.
Yep.
I think the difference is with a resort, lots of times the guests never leave; they stay on campus, if you will, so to speak.
Sure.
But it has all that level of attraction,
yeah.
all the different options that
yep.
you can enjoy.
Well,
so.
And our podcast is largely for folks in Fort Collins or Northern Colorado. There's some listeners outside of our immediate area, but they usually share my same last name and they're just doing me a favor. But most of the listeners are from here. And I just have to say, I mean, this is like, we've done a staycation here.
Mm.
My wife and I, we had little kids, sometimes harder to get away for long periods of time. We had a
yeah.
babysitter for a night. Who doesn't love Old Town?
Right.
And Sunset Lounge is incredible. I mean,
Yeah.
And even in this space, just in my professional life, I mean, I've done weddings here. I've done nonprofit events here,
yeah.
The cafe and the restaurant. It's all just a sweet space.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, you just walk down to Old Town and
yeah.
and poke around different restaurants and things like that. It's really sweet.
Yeah, a couple, half a block away, it's all right there.
Yeah.
So, and when I arrived here, and this is partly... comes from having done some of this work in the past. So I always felt that I could do more with, when I left Cannon Ranch, I didn't really have much of the health wellness stuff left to be done as
yeah.
far as I was no longer at that resort and all those kinds of things. So I wanted to keep that part of who I was. So I would volunteer on a variety of things to do, to help people with a healthier lifestyle. So I guess I always reached out, I was really always reaching out to the community. When I was at Canyon Ranch, we did a number of programs for the schools in and around town, health and wellness programming. And so I continued on with that when I was up in New Hampshire, Vermont, at Dartmouth. And when I got here, I looked up, for some reason, I just thought, okay, what are the nonprofits? And there's like 2,300 that were.
There are a lot of nonprofits,
right?
I've been amazed. Yeah.
It's
I'm one of them now. So
yeah, right. You're added to the list. Yeah. 2,301. And what I knew could be beneficial for this hotel is to be, you know, deeply rooted in the community.
Yeah.
And it always was beneficial for me personally, but now what can we do to expand that in a sense of what, because it's a great gathering place.
That's
right,
but Carl. I mean, like, I don't know a lot of people. I mean, just honestly, like, I don't know a lot of people who are like, I'm moving to a new city. Let me check out the nonprofits.
Well,
you know, I mean, that might be like, you know, the 50th thing on someone's list, or they
right.
bump in, they meet someone, they get invited to an event or a gala or whatever.
Right.
I think it's just like really, it's a testimony of who you are and who you have become, because you do want to be part of the community.
Right.
You know, it's a big hotel just in the middle of Old Town. I think you've probably got a big enough life that you wouldn't need to do that. It wouldn't have been a necessity for you as a person, and yet it's still in you, which I think is that's a story worth telling. That like you show up in a city and you're like, well, what can we do? Where are the nonprofits? How can I learn?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I appreciate you saying that. That's just the way I thought about it. And it's been, and here's the Fort Collins story is that everybody I talked to was so interested in introducing me to the next person who they thought I should meet.
Yeah.
And so it was so easy. There was no resistance. There was actually, you know, incredible encouragement. And so between reaching out to CSU with their hospitality program, to we started this Dog Days things about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and we reached out to, you know, there's plenty of dog nonprofits,
yes.
Right? So
when your city has parades
for corgis, yeah,
then you know you are in a dog friendly city.
Exactly.
That was one of the first things I saw when I moved here, and I was like, oh wow, I didn't know that there were that many corgi owners.
Let alone
they're all in a similar proximity.
It certainly are, and so that's where Dog Days came from. I was like, okay, you know, we have all this crazy thing about dogs in Colorado,
yeah.
And we reached out to a bunch of nonprofits, and they benefited from our proceeds, a portion of our proceeds that when people came in and enjoyed Dog Days. So we have Yappy Hour going on right now in February on Friday nights, and then we have Puppy Yoga tomorrow. And so that started that piece. And the other piece, which I'm really happy to get the support for, is we have a $50,000 scholarship for CSU students, and it's geared towards first generation students.
Wow.
And what it was,
that is really significant.
Yeah, what we were doing when we had graduation and homecoming, we were buying a bunch of tchotchke stuff for guests, higher rate. We wanted to be sure that they felt there was value, right? So we would buy scarves and blankets and hats and that kind of stuff. But what we were finding is about 50%, maybe more, they were just left. I mean, if you're coming to Fort Collins and you're spending weekend with us and you're spending a lot of money, you probably don't need a hat. You probably don't need a scarf either.
Yeah.
So I thought, what if we diverted that money to a scholarship? And I got support from Sage, I got support from our ownership. And so we were spending $10,000 a year on this stuff, which those people didn't need.
Yeah.
And so we created the scholarship.
I think that's incredible.
So,
I mean, you talk about like dollars kind of going to work.
Yeah.
That feels like they're putting to work, getting put to work in a different kind of way,
right.
Which I think is really great.
Yeah. So we put a letter in the guest room, letting them know, because they're all, you know, predominantly all college here because of because their kids are at college here.
Yeah.
So that is something that I'm really happy we were able to pull together and get the support for. And we're also doing a distinguished speaker series with CSU. So we bring in a speaker of some topic that we think would be beneficial for the students, and we do a reception here, and then we do the talk. So and it gets the students here to see the hotel and, you know, have this sort of experience of that component. We also do tours with CSU and on down line with the classes that they have. So there's CSU is a big part of the town, and it's a big part of this place. It's good for us, it's good for them, and on down line. The other piece that we started last year with this, I was at a panel at Front Range Community College talking about leadership and business and on down line, and I met Chantel Henson, who had produced a movie, or directed and produced a movie, independent film on women referees in the NFL.
Interesting.
And I was like, that's exactly what I said. I was like, oh my God, that's fantastic.
Because it has been growing. I mean, if you're watching football, you're noticing it
right.
more and more. But gosh, how long? I mean, 10 years ago, it was not.
When I even a mention of it, right? Yeah. So we got to talking, and we.
Who is this? This sounds like someone I should interview.
Yeah, you should actually. Chantel Henson.
I would love if you could connect me.
Yeah, I will.
That'd be really interesting.
She's fantastic. And she just. We had a cup of coffee, and I said, I'd love to have some independent film in here. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to be sure that there's an opportunity to engage with the producer, director, whoever that person is that's involved with the film. Because particularly with independent films, you watch an independent film and you're like, I'm not sure I get it. So what's the story behind that, or what did I miss, or whatever. So we do a segment, about a 20-minute segment of the film, and then there's Q&A. And fireside chat, and it's just great.
That's awesome.
Because you get the behind the scenes, and you get this sort of sense of really what was the intention, and where did the idea come from, right? All of those kinds of things.
Well, it's interesting to me too, like as you share this, because you know, in some ways, we're a product of our experiences. I just heard this quote the other day, like in the next 5 years, we're going to be a summary of the books we read and the people that we meet, you know, which I think there's probably a couple other things in there too. But it's a pretty good picture of like, how are you continuing to grow, and who is in your life that's going to continue to help you move forward?
Yeah.
We also, you know, we have things from our past that really impact us today. And I think way back to when we started talking, you were talking about these towns that you grew up in that were really welcoming to the arts.
Yeah,
and here you are. I was still kind of part of how you lead this hotel and creating space for independent film. And
So that's been that's wonderful, and it's grown. And we have our second segment this year, starting in March. And it's the third Wednesday of every month. And then Off the Hook, which is another organization we just partnered with this year, and they provide instruments and musical lessons for underprivileged youth.
Oh, awesome!
So they. Are now, they have an event here every month on Sundays. And it's just really wonderful to share these spaces with these nonprofits, because it's really good for us to have people coming in and enjoying the space, but also seeing that we are connected to the community.
Off the Hook is what it's called.
Yeah, Off the Hook.
And
another great organization.
I mean, not everybody always realizes, but sometimes music has a higher kind of barrier of entry than people realize. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the cost
of instruments are expensive.
Yeah.
If you're not going to buy them, you got to rent them. But even that is a regular bill that you got to commit to.
Yeah.
And then usually there's some form of training or coaching or teaching, which costs, because not everybody can just pick it up an instrument. And I mean, of course, there are people who can.
Yeah,
But not everybody can just pick up an instrument and make it happen.
Right, and there's a lot of science behind music and development, brain development, and on down line. So, and you know, playing a violin and the piano, the stimulation on the brain and the development years later, et cetera, et cetera. So, And of course, with the music themed hotel, it, you know, it just fits really nicely with all that we do well. So I think, and really, I know you know this, and there's a lot of people out here in Fort Collins that know it, is you get more out of the benefit when you serve, right, than the, you know, the actual organization or person, I think, sometimes.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. There are just things that you can't, to critique myself a little bit, you know, in 5 years, you're going to be a product of the books you read and the people you're around. There are things you just can't read enough about.
Right.
Like, you actually have to go and do it.
Yeah.
And when you do, it does impact the community little by little, but really, you are shaped, you are formed. And you look back 5-10 years from now and you're like, oh gosh, like I've grown so much as a man or a woman, as a father, as a husband, as a friend, as a community member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then more recently, we last year and this year, we did a dinner for Matthew's house, here at the hotel. And then I then asked, could we partner, would it be comfortable and possible to adopt a family for the year instead of just on the holidays?
Yeah.
So we now have two families that we're connected with, and our team is all rallying around, and again, that is part of that. That's a culture builder, right?
Yeah.
So we're doing something for those who might have some needs, and it's a feel good, all the way around.
Yeah.
So that, and again, that's
the, I hope what people hear is, because I think sometimes, you know, you drive around the city or whatever, and you look at it, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
If you come in for a cup of coffee or lunch, you can, I think if you're not thinking about it critically, you don't know these stories, you can think, oh, it's just a beautiful hotel. It's largely for people coming in to town or whatever.
Yep.
But really, you guys are having a pretty substantial impact on our community.
It's building, and I think we're heading, I think we're creating that. It's a very good partnership to have, because more people come in to see the hotel, enjoy the experience, and then perhaps they come back.
Yeah.
But the team, and what's happened now is I reached out to a few places. Now other of our staff are reaching out, and it is very much a part of what we think about. And you know, the other thing is Bohemian Foundation, they support the bands here, and they do that so that there's no cover charge.
Yeah.
Right. So that was the trigger for me as well, is that you're making this place accessible. It can be a little intimidating. You might not think that it's necessarily a place you want to go hang out, or you can. Some people, I still get questions on occasion, can I go to the Elizabeth?
Yeah.
And I said, oh yes, please, right? So, and
I had old fashions. Here's part, this is part confession to you, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm just letting you know. We had old fashions for my friend's 40th in the Sunset Lounge, me and some friends. And my wife, she is a rule follower. She is not like to mess around. I grew up kind of a gnarly kid. I was always coming outside the line. And so on our way to the, I can't believe I'm about to confess this to the GM at the hotel, on our way from the Sunset Lounge to the elevator, I knocked on a random person's door and left my wife in the hallway as I ran to the elevator. She was so embarrassed. She was so embarrassed. And I was somewhere else by the time
person
answered the door. And she had to deal with it. So I won't do it again. I won't disturb the peace at your hotel. But I don't know.
Hopefully there's I like a little, you know, a little sense of humor there every now and then.
Yeah. The child in me.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to let go. So I think, you know, and again, I've been so encouraged by anybody I talk to, and they're like, yes. And there's not this hesitation at all.
Yeah.
So when we do what we do, and this hotel has so much to offer the town, I wanted to, and the other, you know, these other little things that we're doing is we bring in the jazz band for their year-end performance with Rocky Mountain High School and Fort Collins High School. and you, the kids are here, and they're like, I am in a really cool place.
Yeah. This is, I mean, even where we're doing the interview here, I mean, this right. is a cool spot of your yeah. of your hotel.
Yeah, so the Magic Rat, they come in and they're performing in yeah. in a real place instead right. of a high school auditorium.
Yep.
And I think that the lift of that, right, is not only encouraging, but it's also recognizing their effort.
Yep.
In being in this band, and the parents come, and you know, it's just a, it's just something that feels really good for everybody. Great for us. It's great for them.
So well, I gotta say, I mean, every time I've been here, your staff bleeds hospitality. I mean, yeah. I mean, they really do. I've brought my entire team here. They've cared for us well. I've been here with different families, whether we're celebrating or I've even been here with some families who are mourning and grieving and everything in between. And the team, your team, has always cared for us so well, gone the extra mile.
Yeah.
It reminds me of this book that's on my wife's shelf called, I think, Unreasonable Hospitality,
yeah.
which you guys live.
Right.
But here's what's so interesting to me. You're not really just you're not just really leading that and creating that culture for your clients,
mm-hmm.
but it's now bleeding out into the community. Because I think it would be, maybe we could call it unreasonable hospitality, to bring in Rocky Mountain High or whatever to come into this little jazz hole and be able
right.
to play.
Right.
That's not necessary for you. You have like a real job to
right.
do.
Right. Right.
But that's starting to bleed out because it's in you and it's in your team.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, I think it's worth celebrating.
Yeah. I think because of the background that I have, I really more of a humanitarian than I am a business person.
Yeah.
But it's one of those classic scenarios. You can be a humanitarian and do better in your business.
Yeah.
Right. It's not business first. It's human condition first.
Yep.
And that's true with our team and how our team connects with each other. And everybody knows who's done this and in life is that the better you treat people, the better they treat somebody else. Yep. So we try to do as much as we can to ensure our team is feeling cared for, thought about, respected, and all of that then translates to the guest experience. And you know, obviously you're working towards selecting individuals that are in that same, you know, they have that interest yeah. in being serving others.
And yeah, well, you got to find those young Carl Pratts, you know, that don't wait, but they see something that needs right. to be addressed and they address it and they yeah. do it with hospitality and care and
yeah.
within
yeah.
the values of the greater company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think the other pieces along my career is there are times in which it's just there's luck.
Yeah.
You know, there's some luck in there. I met two people when I was at the spa at Stowe who knew Mel Zuckerman, who's the founder of Canaan Ranch, and had I not met them and had they not known Mel, I might not have ended up at Canaan Ranch and spent 17 years of my life there.
Yeah.
So I think that but it is also taking advantage of those yep. opportunities, right? So recognizing that gift and then following it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh man, Carl, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate
yeah.
you sharing some of this time with me. I don't know, like as we kind of bring this to a close, if you have anything else that you want to share, but I just want to reiterate to the listeners that they should come in and they should eat lunch here. They should grab a glass of wine or a drink up at Sunset Lounge.
Yeah.
They can do a staycation here. Yeah. And if they have family or friends coming to visit, I suppose you could put them in your basement, but really what might be better is to bring them to a nice hotel.
Yeah.
And then they get a win, and yeah. you get a little peace and quiet in your house yeah, when your right, family right. is visiting as well. But.
Yeah, I do think that there's, again, I still talk to people and they don't know where the Elizabeth is. So, you know, just in it, and when people, there's not one person that doesn't walk in here and feel good
yeah.
and feel comfortable. Again, as you said, the team is just incredibly welcoming, and there's so much to do here, and so many special locations, special places, and special touches when you're in these spaces. And we have, even if you do nothing else but to come into the lobby and then turn the corner to the elevators, we have this fantastic art piece that is cassette tape that's been crocheted. And the hotel has art pieces that's curated specifically for the Elizabeth. It will not be duplicated in any other location. So there's just some special little spots here that I would want everyone in the community to feel perfectly welcome and perfectly comfortable coming in and enjoying the spaces.
Carl, thank you so much. I look forward to doing this again, just kind of continuing to get to know you and your organization, your company here. Thank you so much for what you do for the community. Obviously, I also know you're employing a lot of people, and that's really important to the success and the continued growth of our community as well. And just grateful for the way that hospitality is bleeding into every space in this hotel, but also out into our city.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for listening to the Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.